Henry, I thought of you yesterday because I remember once you were a member of the London Library.
Oh, God, that was such a... Yeah, it's a really pretentious phase of mine.
The British Library or the London...
No. It's like a private library you can pay to go into.
Oh, right. This is the one off... Is it off Piccadilly or something? Is it that? Yeah, tucked away.
It's St. James's Square.
Yeah.
And you basically go in and it's basically just Tom Stoppard being...
Just swearing at the coffee machine.
But I remember you remember.
Yeah, I was a member.
And yesterday I walked past a library where... it's a long story, but it put me in mind of that. And I remember thinking, I wonder how many times Henry went during that year where he was spending a certain amount of money on it.
Well, I joined the London Library as one of the most grand gestures of procrastination. It was probably peak procrastination. I think I had an Edinburgh show to write. I was struggling to concentrate in cafes and stuff. And I thought...
You thought the problem isn't me.
The problem, it can't be. That's the one thing I ruled out from the beginning. It cannot be me. So it must be my environment. A flower cannot flower if it is not in the right environment. A flower cannot flower in a Costa. That's why there are no live plants in a Costa.
In fact, nothing living at all, really.
Nothing living can thrive in a Costa. So I decided the solution was to join a sort of a place with kind of dusty books on the shelves.
Surrounded by books, by tomes, great tomes.
Great tomes. And also, surely, exposure to Stoppard's air. I'll absorb some of that.
Olivier Award-winning guffs.
Yeah. The very farts of Stoppard.
Filtering into your brain.
Exactly. Surely that's going to rub off. But the main reason I did was there was a long joining process whereby as soon as that started, I could then excuse myself from working at all until I deferred working.
Very good.
To when I've joined the London Library.
Very good.
So that gave me 2 weeks off. Yeah. That's the point of procrastination. You get to breathe. Whew. You dust off Abe's Odyssey. Yeah. And you buy a PlayStation 2 from the internet. That also takes some time, which is nice because that takes the pressure off having to play the Abe's Odyssey, which also has a certain amount of pressure involved. So, yeah, so basically you're creating situations where you're waiting for stuff to happen. So then I joined the London Library.
And then you've got to be turn around and understand how it all works, right? You've got to work out where the toilets are and all that kind of thing and where the coffee machine is.
Yeah.
That takes a few days.
You get given a little tour, which is nice.
Then there's your induction drinks.
Induction drinks. Then there's...
the hazing rituals.
Performing in a full production of the musical South Pacific with Tom Stoppard.
That's right.
Yeah, but silently, because it is a library. Yeah.
Because it is a library. So that obviously takes up quite a lot of time. There's a tour of the map of the stacks. So you're given a map of the stacks and a series of challenges. So can you find your way around the stacks?
There's no shelves, are there, in this library? It's just stacks.
It's just stacks. It's old style.
50-foot high stacks.
It's stacks. So if your book is towards the bottom of a stack, you just have to read your way through the books from the top to get there. That's how, there's no way around it. And that's, of course, why people are so much better read in those days. Yeah, you're given a series of stack challenges. So you'll be... you'll be taken to a copy of, The Origin of Species by Darwin.
Oh, I've not heard of that one.
It's a really good one.
Absolutely brilliant twist in it, isn't it?
It's a good twist. Don't tell him.
And then it does peter out a bit after that.
And they'll be like, right, you've got 5 minutes to hand me a copy of The Pelican Brief by John Grisham. Yeah. And it's run, go, 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 go. And you've got to negotiate your way through the stacks.
But that one's easy in the London Library because there's the Grisham wing.
Well, it's in the Grisham wing, exactly.
Find me... The Necronomicon.
It's the kind of place that would have a Necronomicon. Yeah, yeah. But it's quite... Did I show you around, Ben, when I was a member?
Was that an option?
No. I would have loved that.
No, I just,
you could have introduced us to Stoppard.
You kept that quiet.
You know what? I just remembered now. I remember at the time thinking that there were certain people that probably wouldn't want to introduce us to Stoppard. Obviously, there's a few big ticks. Yep. Stoppard ready. Ben. just don't see it clicking. Sorry. Don't see them clicking.
So what I want to know is how well used was your subscription?
Fucking useless. I was back in Costa within like 2 weeks. It was... Can I tell you what happened? This is such a classic... this is just... What happened is what always happens in life in any situation like this, which is I got there, got through all the induction stuff, and then it was like, right, so where am I going to sit? So basically... It's a kind of cavernous, labyrinthine old building. It's just how you'd like an old library to look. And in different little corridors and little rooms sticking off bits, there are little tables with people sat around them working quietly. So I found this one space and I was like, okay, it was a side room with quite a big table with like maybe 7 or 8 people around it. And I was sat there and I was like, I just felt a bit uncomfortable. Something wasn't right. I was like, I need a coffee. Went through a labyrinthine series of corridors, staircases. It's all quite M.C. Escher. It's like you'll be at the top of a staircase and you look at the bottom of an upside down baby.
Who's got your laptop?
Hang on, that's not a baby. That's Mark Lawson wearing a nappy.
Reading the Necronomicon. Helping himself to my sandwiches.
So then what you'd have to do is try and launch yourself up in the air, because with any upside-down library system, if you can get above the halfway point between a floor and a ceiling, gravity, you know, reverse gravity operates.
You fall up.
So then what you're hoping is then to fall upwards, smack into Lawson, into Lawson, baby. That worked. I've now got Lawson's sick all over me, though. Some of that's gone onto the Necronomicon. He's saying you're going to have to pay for that. But at that point, I've crawled off through a sort of tiny little air vent. Then you're crawling through sort of spiral spaces, and suddenly you're in Tom Stoppard's mind.
Tea party, yeah.
It's a constant tea party with him and 15 other Tom Stoppards all discussing what their favourite Stoppard is, and all agreeing that it's all Stoppard. You then fall out into a kind of information flume that's just you and loads of like bits of punctuation, letters, just thoughts and abbreviations, just pure grammar.
And all the time, all you can hear is loud Prokofiev playing ear splitting.
Words. Dickens. John Ronson. Sorry, I've just looked at my bookshelf.
Did you put John Ronson next to Dickens?
I just looked up at my bookshelf. I thought, I'll say the first authorizer was John Ronson.
I mean, he's very good, but it doesn't feel quite in the sort of...
So you might, if you're lucky, you'll tumble out of the sort of grammar flume. And
into the syntax jacuzzi.
Hi. Hi.
Conjugate this.
Hi, I'm John Updike. No, I'm not dead, and I'm not American. Enjoy.
And then get out.
And then get the fuck out. Then you have to run down the staircase of pages, which is terrifying. It's a moving staircase of pages, which are flapping. And they're empty pages. And if you get squashed between them, you become a Booker Prize nominated book in 4 years. So it's where it all happens, basically. So eventually I went through various service elevators, various like book repository type storage bits, and found my way to the tiny cafe at the top of the building. It's several buildings in a row, in fact, but there's a tiny little sitting roomy kitchen bit. Honesty system, coffee machine, fine with that. Put a quid in, made myself a coffee. Heading back into the stacks, and someone puts a hand on my arm. It's only bloody William Blake. And he's like, these feet, right, in ancient times, they might have walked across England's mountains deer. Is that the right line? Green.
Something green, isn't it?
But I tell you one thing I've never done. It's gone back into the main body of the London Library with a coffee because it's not allowed.
Oh.
Suddenly, it all starts falling apart. Suddenly the books are...
Oh, that's not going to do, is it? That's not going to do for Henry Packer one little bit.
So I glug my coffee. I head back to my bit where I was sitting, where I was... with the computer, and I'm feeling...
By which time you're just about ready for another coffee.
I just about feel I've earned another coffee. And I'm someone who... I need my coffee to be hot at all times, which is why I've done a lot of research into the heated... thermoses, and I've discovered that they do exist and they do work. That's been the fruits of my research. So then I was like, okay... I need to sit in a bit that's closer to the cafe. So I moved. There are various premium seats. So there are different levels of stacks, right? There's like level to deep, deep, deep underground. So it gets, and the books get lower and lower brow the deeper you go.
So by the time you get to the bottom, it's like, you know, cooking tips from Ian Beale.
Exactly. And the idea is that those should be as close as possible to the bowels of hell, those kinds of books.
I see. Okay. Okay. I understand the logic. Yeah.
And of course, then there's the bottom zone, which is simply called the Titchmarsh floor.
That's right.
And the tiles feel hot underfoot there.
The tiles feel hot, and there are vents which they say do literally have hot air coming from Hades itself into the Titchmarsh level.
and the occasional escape to Damon.
So basically the prime seats were, there's this little individual table you can get, which in the middle of a stack, they're next to a window, which you can open. Oh yes, because it's also blisteringly hot in there. It's
because of the portal to Hades.
Two things, the portal to Hades and Stoppard's guffs. Those two things. It's blisteringly hot and stuffy. And just a general dusty sense of stuffy, you know, stuffiness of an old institution.
And everyone's wearing thick tweed as well. I mean, I assume you're having to wear thick tweed as well.
Of course, regardless.
Yeah, you have to.
All year round, yeah. Right?
You walk through room made of corduroy to get in. So you're actually, so by the time you get in, you're fully.
So you're triple tweeded by the
you're triple
time you get
tweeded.
You got your tweed vest, tweed shirt, tweed and, tie, tweed overshirt.
And all the hinge bits of your body are corduroy, so you can still move your, you can still hinge your arms and legs. You can still nod sagely to, if someone says, for example, that Stoppard's good, or that they like Stoppard, you're still able to nod. You have corduroy detailing. It's very much like medieval armour, but corduroy and tweed. Anyway, so yeah, there's these different stacks. Basically, if you put human beings together in a space with limited seating, what happens is, on a daily basis, there's a kind of unspoken seating war which takes place, whereby people are battling for the best seats, best tables, best chairs, best plug sockets. I'd get in early. I'd be like, right, I'm going to go for one of those individual tables up on the third floor. It's near the coffee place. Nice window for a bit of air. I'd go in, and bloody Agatha Christie would be sat there or whatever. So, and then I'd go, right, I'll stick or twist. I'm going to try the level below this one, even though I know the level above this one is slightly better, but that's more likely to be taken. So I'd then wait for the lift, which was punishingly slow, to get into the lift, and it would always be Stoppard in it finishing an anecdote about himself and whacking the keep the doors open thing on the floor above. He wouldn't let the lift move till he finished his anecdote. But he'd get into the punishingly slow lift. That would come down. The lifts would come open. I'd weave my way through the stacks to that table underneath the table on the floor above that I wanted. I'd get there, obviously... bloody Robert Browning would just be settling in, taking off his tweed outer jacket. And
the plug's already taken up with Agatha Christie. He's got an extensional cable who's come from the...
Yeah, she's run that through.
The floor above anyway. So
she's run that through from above. Also, you're looking at your watch here. The morning is going. It's now 11:50 and I still haven't sat down. I then start thinking maybe I could...
Even though you were careful to arrive, ready to start at 11:45.
At 11 on the dot.
The crack of 11:45.
On the crack of 11:45. And by that point, I'd be thinking, maybe I could circle back round to that to the Agatha Christie seat because she is getting on a bit now. So sometimes she will go for a mid-morning. She'll go for that mid-morning.
Death.
Reanimation.
Reanimation enema. We'll go for that often at around 12:15. I'll circle back to that one. She's still there. I do the thing of hanging around in the stacks, waiting in case someone left. Then I think, fuck it, I'll go back to those really bad seats. I go back to the worst room. That would all be taken. And then it'd be like, well, look, it's 11:55. The day's basically finished.
If I leave now, I could make the first showing of Neighbours.
To be honest, the whole thing was an absolute... I kind of knew it was at the time. It was just sort of procrastination and with a healthy helping...
of Henry Packer.
Henry Packer, laced, enrobed, in a meaty coating of good old-fashioned vanity. Who the fuck do you think you fucking are? But I did. It was nice being in that part of London. There's old, this like shops selling old brogues and old hats. There's hatters. You still get old hat.
Oh, is that German Street?
German Street. You get old hat stoppers. There'll still be a guy offering to polish your hat. They'll, you know, there's all that old stuff is happening around there.
You just get upside down in a little sort of stall.
And he spins you around, and he'll
buffs you and polishes you.
When your year subscription came up, did you then forget to cancel it and pay for another year?
I think I'm still a member, Ben. In fact, I recently upgraded to the Stoppard Lounge.
Which is a great place not to go.
But does do a mean lunchtime pedicure.
You don't even have to go to the London Library to be a member. We'll look after the library for you. Just sit back in a cafe franchise of your choice, safe with the knowledge that Stoppard is okay.
Okay, let's turn on the bean machine. Bean machine. This week's topic is sent in by somebody called Your Worst Nightmare.
So that was my mum turning into a witch and back again, flipping between the two at the top of a staircase. I was at the bottom of the staircase. My brother was looking at me from a swimming pool through a window. I had to lift a huge bag of very, very heavy muesli from the floor onto the table in time before the staircase disappeared, and I wouldn't be able to get up the staircase and through to the swimming pool to do something with my brother. And meantime, my mum was flicking between being herself and a witch.
Is that real?
Yeah. Well, that's my worst nightmare.
Like your worst nightmare?
Same for me.
Same one.
Same.
Yeah. It's a I mean, it is one of the classics. It's a bit boring. Yeah.
Henry's mum. Same for me, but I was the muesli.
Just get me onto that table, you idiot, Henry. Get me onto that... What's wrong with him? Just lift me up.
We're running out of time.
We're running out of time.
My worst nightmare was when I was a kid. I'd watched a TV adaptation of The Hound of the Baskervilles. And then for the next week or so, I'd had awful dreams about this huge hound chasing me around and being scary at night. That was my worst nightmare.
Can I say, The Hound of the Baskervilles, for me, is in the category of... It's a bit like Nightmare on Elm Street. I don't know if you remember that film. Yeah,
right.
Or know of it in the posters and stuff, whereby before I'd actually seen or read The Hound of the Baskerville, done it, you know, the idea of it terrified me. Hound, Baskerville, the Hound of the Baskerville, Hound sounds so terrifying. Hound, and
it's not called the Dog of the Baskervilles,
and the Baskervilles, they sound so sort of frightening as a group of people, and so I was terrified of The Hound of the Baskervilles until I read it and then saw it and realised it's just a fairly sort of, you know.
I think The Hound of the Baskervilles was ruined for me by being a member of the Scooby-Doo generation, because I'd had a lot of Scooby-Doo before I came round to The Hound of the Baskervilles.
Yep.
And when all I was expecting the whole way through was just for someone to rip off a dog mask at some point and say, it was me.
And it is that kind of, it's a classic Scooby-Doo kind of story, isn't it?
Baskerville. And that didn't happen. I was like, come on. Where's your reveal?
Come on,
where's your big twist here, lads? Come on.
And the other one like that for me was Nightmare on Elm Street, where the poster and everything about it and the idea of it was terrifying to me. And it gave me nightmares until I saw the film again. It was just sort of slightly naff and didn't find it that frightening.
Hmm. Nightmare on Elm Street was also the kind of film at school where there'd be rumours about things that had happened to people who had watched the movie.
Yes, exactly.
I think it's the sort of progenitor of that.
Yes.
I think that film you mentioned the other day, Henry, the one, I can't remember what it is, that Japanese horror where something comes out of the telly and...
The Ring?
That's it.
Oh, yeah.
I wondered if that had even inspired The Ring, because those kind of stories where, my friend said that his cousin had... watched it, and then he went to sleep, and then he had a nightmare, and he was pulled into a waterbed, and he was sliced to pieces. Did he though? Yeah.
And there was a small Japanese girl with long black hair, but her head was the wrong way around, or something.
Horror films are never as scary as you think.
No,
they're
the
be,
idea of them is terrifying.
Them.
Yeah, yeah.
And because in reality, they're just a bit sort of naff in a fun way. Like, I like them, but...
Of course, the truth is, if you really want real horror at the moment, you just watch the bloody news. Just let that bed in for a minute.
And you don't know whether you're going to be watching a horror or a clown show.
Oh. Yeah. Or a clown horror.
There's certainly a strong mystery element to some of their policies and
decision making.
I don't really need to finish that point because
I'll tell you what, I wish the Prime Minister would rip off her face and reveal that it was a cartoon dog, because that probably make better decisions about economy and policies and so on.
Sometimes it's like watching a period drama, isn't it? The way these guys carry on, as if it's the bloody 1800s.
Yeah. Or an episode of Doctor Who, where the Daleks are the ones who are actually running a lot of the major departments of government.
Or the news. Watching the news, isn't it? Watching the news these days.
I tell you what, you could get all the greatest writers in history and they wouldn't be able to make up a story as fictional seeming as the current actual factual news is. It's food for thought, isn't it? Anyway, nice little section. Lovely, that food for thought.
We could call it food for thought or take that, could we?
Oh, I like take that. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm. Exclamation mark.
All I do each night is satire.
hoping that a part of me one day will improve the policies that are currently governing the future of this country economically and so on.
Before we continue with the podcast, here is a note from this week's editor, Benjamin. You may have noticed that in the previous section, Henry referred to the Prime Minister of the UK using female pronouns.
I tell you what, I wish the Prime Minister would rip off her face and reveal that it was a cartoon dog.
Would rip off her face. Her face. Her face.
You'll notice that we used the pronoun her there to describe the Prime Minister. Of course, since this has been recorded, we've got a new Prime Minister because, of course, they come along as regularly as German trains these days, don't they? The bloody PMs. How long will Rishi last? Longer than one of the yogurts in my fridge? Well, let's see.
Won't you beg? Won't you beg? Won't you beg for good?
Okay, so your worst nightmare is sent in the topic this week. And it is.
Right. Yes.
Glass.
Glass.
Just for the listener, I can see Henry, he's got his glass of water and he's running his finger around the rim of it and he's wetting his finger in the hope that it's going to create a beautiful ethereal sort of sound.
Well, that doesn't work with Perspex.
I'm going to have a go on mine, but it's not going to work, is it?
It's worked. It's worked beautifully.
Now, obviously, this is happening increasingly now, actually, as we've done more and more episodes. We have actually mentioned glass before.
Have we?
Well, yeah, because Walter from Austria told us that...
Yes, of course, Walter.
Glass isn't a liquid.
Yeah.
Or is a liquid. I can't remember which it was.
Well, we decided it was a liquid. It definitely is a liquid. Well, let's not bring that... Yeah. It's why when you go to a medieval church... You'll find fat glass at the bottom of all of those windows, isn't it? There's fat glass at the bottom.
Fat kind of Ribena glass, stained.
Ribena glass, or because all the different stained glasses are mixed together. And thin glass up at the top, isn't it? Because it seeps down with time.
So obviously me and Henry, we see the world through glass.
So you do.
On a daily basis. Mike, have you ever wanted or needed glasses?
I do. Well, I had this chat with a friend the other day. I don't think I've ever had a proper eye test.
Mike, actually, what are you doing?
But I just arrogantly assume that I've got perfect jet pilot vision.
Mike, this is like your dental situation you told us about. Mm. You're not looking after your two main, the two main bits of people's health, which, you know, you have to sort of look after yourself to a degree, isn't it? Is teeth and eyes. You need to go get those tests. Yeah. Are you getting those little cards through the door that they used to do in the 80s? I don't know if they still do.
Yeah, we do get the odd card through the door, actually. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I've sent other members of my family away to use the cards.
Well, you think you have. You don't know who they are. They're just sort of... You've sent the wobbly forms that surround you. Wobbly friendly forms. Those are the ones in the home. Wobbly angry forms. Those are the ones in the street.
Those are the ones I hit with my car.
Yeah, the tallest one.
The tall wobbly one.
The tall fuzzy one who I made some vows to some years ago.
Yes. Yeah.
She
was slightly less wobbly then, wasn't she? She's slightly crisper.
She got fixed up with some lenses.
Yeah.
And the one of the bigger of the two smaller ones also got fixed up with some lenses. The smallest one's okay. Pamela, like me, has never had a proper eye test, and we just assume.
That's a good point. Like, do you get dogs that need
Dog specs?
I think they prefer contacts on the whole, because otherwise it's a bit of a nightmare.
Ben, we might have just come up with the cutest medical innovation of all time.
Frames to match her face shape, the works, right?
Dog specs. I tell you what, dog owners, you could 100% sell dog specs.
Oh, of course you could.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I mean, yeah. People will take money out of their children's lives, out of their own health for their animals.
Yeah. And all you'd need to do is the most... You'd set yourself up as a canine optometrist or whatever. You'd need to do the most cursory examination. You'd need to construct some sort of device, but you could do that by sticking a couple of kind of plug adapters in a tin can together with gaffer tape, colouring it in, pretending to wave that over an eyeball of a dog and say, this is the left side minus 20 and the right side 3.0.
I think it'd be quite easy to sell glasses in the way, because you put the chart up in front of the dog, you say, read the top line. They fail to do that by basically printing money.
Yeah, I'm sorry, madam, but Pam has just done a series of incoherent barks.
She's colorblind. She'll never be a fighter pilot.
She'll never fly a plane. She didn't even get past the A, the big A. Now, it could be that she just does bark generally most of the time and doesn't say letters and stuff. But is that a risk you're prepared to take with this, look at her cute face?
And for just £47 a week.
You can subscribe to the feeling that Pam's vision is okay. And you can't put a price on that, but we have anyway. We've guessed at £49.99. Yeah. But you can't put a price on £49.99. If you did, it'd be roughly 50 quid, isn't it? That's what it is, roughly, to the nearest.
I think I've heard of the odd dog having a cataract operation.
Right.
I come to think of it.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah. And that sounds feasible. But correcting your visual acuity seems like a bit of a stretch.
I'm just trying to picture Bluebell with a monocle.
And an ear trumpet.
It's unbearably sweet.
It is almost unbearably sweet.
But it's not far from that sweet into sinister, is it, by the same token?
It's true.
It could be a little arch in a cat.
Those things are always very, very closely linked with Bluebell. But also because then once you've got the monocle, it's how long is it till you've got the top hat? Yeah,
the cane with the,
the cane.
Sliver of a blade hidden within the shaft.
That's right.
The railway empire.
Yes. The monopolizing control of the utilities of this country.
The offshore accounts. The villa in Turks and Caicos.
That's right. The initially just the occasional WhatsApp, but then the increasingly close real friendship with King Jong-un. Isn't it? Holidaying together.
Basketballing.
And then, before you know it, they're both wearing hard hats, being given a tour of a munitions factory, being photographed together.
With Dennis Rodman.
Who's, yeah, very much now third fiddle.
Who's Dennis Rodman?
He's the American basketball player who's big-time pal of Kim's.
Oh,
he's
wow.
A basketball star who now... does he live in North Korea or is he just mates?
No, I think he's just mates, but he has been over. He was part of that Chicago Bulls dream team. Gang, yeah. Wasn't he? He was the kind of tattooed, the sort of wild playboy guy.
A loose cannon.
Yeah, but a genius on the court.
Yeah.
I thought you meant Dennis Waterman. That's what I was picturing.
Oh, yeah, him too.
Be so good for you.
Oh, yeah, he's big friends with Kim Jong-un as well.
Yeah.
Big fan of Minder. I was thinking about those celebs that kind of sort of become the friend of a dictator. Like the other big one is Steven Seagal.
Who's he friends with?
Putin.
He loves Putin. And so...
he lives in Russia now.
Does he?
No.
So did Depardieu. Depardieu has distanced himself, hasn't he, recently? But I think Sagan is still bang up for it.
Well, I was wondering, because I was thinking about, obviously, with the situation with Ukraine and the war, whether Sagan is now feeling a bit like, oh, shit.
I don't know. I half expect to see Sagan turning up at the, I don't know, in Belarus somewhere with a squad ready to go in.
Basically, as long as he thinks of himself as a chef and as whoever he's fighting as being terrorists on a train.
He's unstoppable.
He's
unstoppable.
Point him in the right direction.
Yeah. Give him a series of sort of steak knives and whisks and sort of spatulas and stuff.
There's an amazing video on the internet of him somewhere in Russia, and he's doing a demonstration of his, have you seen this? Of his martial arts prowess. But he's now... it's fair to say a bit past it. He must be 25 stone. He's massive. Doesn't look the most energetic.
He's incredibly old as well, isn't he?
He must be old, exactly.
He must be really old.
So, fair play to him, but probably not the best martial artist anymore, one might think. And basically, it's something that only happens in dictatorships, which I quite enjoy, which is the kind of spectacle where they've just been told, right, run towards him. He will essentially pat you on the back, and then you have to flip away as if you've been... as if he's done something amazing. And so it's just a series of these very lithe young martial artists getting their ass kicked by Seagal, but he's not moving. He's just standing there and they sort of run into
him.
He
sort of wafts them away.
He just wafts them away. It's absolutely amazing.
Using sheer charisma.
But I think he's genuinely had a sort of... someone pointed this out to me. I think he has, in all of his movies, basically since Tommy Lee Jones and Under Siege, no one on camera has laid a finger upon the man. So I think all of his self-made movies ever since then, that punch never lands.
Oh, is that right?
The kick never lands. Whoever comes at him, he flips them off into the nearest wall.
So even stage punches now he can't actually take.
No, he won't. Yeah, there is absolutely zero tension. Like you know from the beginning of the movie, he's going to be fine. Everything's going to be fine.
So is he still doing films? Is he?
I don't think so. I wonder whether he's making them in Russia.
Sort of Russian propaganda. Because he's not cashed in then on the whole like old action hero guys films. He could be doing well with that.
No, he is a bit he's a bit problematic in the Me Too era, I think. A few things have raised their head, yeah.
I think he does also in his self-producing, he also includes a sort of very gratuitous sex scene with a woman 40 years his junior.
Oh, is that...
He tends to do that in his films.
Okay.
But yeah. The other one is, yeah, Jeff Bodger, who I think no longer lives in Russia, but was mates.
Really?
But it's a kind of, it's a good late career thing to do. Like, I wonder if, you know, for the three of us...
It's one of your options.
If Three Bean Salad starts, you know, waning a bit and people aren't interested anymore.
If Trump gets back in.
Well, look, you know, people obviously have made approaches, haven't they? That's not... We don't have to...
We don't have to be quiet about that, is what you mean.
No.
Right.
We've had offers, haven't we?
From the Burmese hunter.
Right. And essentially, they give you a kind of... Well, it's a kind of ceremonial role. You have to sort of turn up at the old rally, don't you?
You wear the merch.
And obviously we would just be we'd be doing our lukewarm banter, wouldn't we? But through sort of tannoy is in a sort of massive sports stadium.
And in tacit support of an autocratic regime.
Yeah.
Yeah, sure. And you've got to make a living, haven't you?
You've got to. But at the moment, while Patreon is holding up, it's not something we've had to think about too hard.
Do we need to put in a fourth tier, which is like you can only subscribe to if you're an autocratic dictator?
I think we did. I think if you've got an Air Force. Well, I suppose it's, you know, you've got to think long term. Look, showbiz, right? It's a fickle business, isn't it? Yeah. You're here today, you're gone tomorrow, right? We all know that's how it works. So what are your long term options, realistically?
I was planning on leaning heavily on my wife. Really?
So that's one of the options.
Financially
is yeah. Wheeling on Mike's wife. Wheeling on Mike's wife. That's something we've discussed.
She's got a pension, skilled professional.
Well, normal job people. You try and lean on normal job people.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
Yeah, because my options were always maybe go into teaching.
Yeah.
Or become the favourite of an autocratic dictator.
Yeah. And also, can you teach lukewarm banter, Ben? Do you know what I mean? So I think autocratic dictator is the best bet. Now, obviously, it's not that we're in favour of autocracies, is it? But the fact is, if you're looking for a long-term solution, you need an autocracy, because an elected government is no good for us, is it? Because
as anyone watching the news can attest, welcome to Take That. Never forget where your satire comes from.
Relight my interest in economics and fiscal policy. Go on, Henry. Carry on. You're just in the middle of digging yourself into an increasingly hazardous hole.
But it looks like you've kind of been stunned by the satire.
I have. It's taking my breath away.
He's vexed himself.
I'm trying to think of a fucking Take That thing.
£1 million of debt later.
Wouldn't even scratch the surface of the national deficit over the next 5 years.
Very good.
Yeah.
Very good. More than worth it.
Thanks, mate.
We're going to have to start doing album tracks, I think, soon. So.
But the point is, we realistically, beyond the age of, let's say, 52...
Okay.
None of the three of us can earn a penny for the rest of our lives. We know that. We sign up for this life knowing that.
Yeah.
Unless, well, actually, there's a third way, isn't there? Sorry, there's going to teaching, there's lean on Mike's wife, there's autocratic dictator, or there's the fourth way, actually.
Get cast in a detective series.
Become a right-wing grifter on GB News.
Oh, yes.
Yes. Yes, I forgot that.
But
is the
I think
other
that's option. We can't all do that. I think there has to be one. I think because
One of us will for sure. It's just weird,
of course. But I think it's stronger if one of the three of us, you know, branches out and goes into that. You know, oh, he used to be in this. But do you know what I mean? It works better.
I'm going to be all over that, because the main way you become someone that can work on GB News is by having your phrases that you can hide the word woke in. And I've got, obviously, Wokerati. I'm sick of listening to the Wokerati.
Good.
That's good.
Solid.
Yeah.
I don't know about you, but I didn't particularly want to spend the rest of my life living in Wokeganistan.
Oh, strong. Very good.
I thought I was taking a British Airways flight, not a Luftwoke Waffer. Luftwoke Waffer. Luftwoke Waffer. I'm working on that one.
That's evident, but you know, it's a strong start with the other two, for sure.
Maybe go simple with it, like something like, it just needs to be like, I thought I was paying my council tax, not my woke tax.
Oh, that's good.
There's no wordplay there, but it's very...
Yeah, it's direct,
it cuts
isn't it?
Spongy. So-called comedians, I thought I was going to be hearing jokes, not wokes.
Oh, fuck, that's good. You're all over this, Ben.
Yeah. I've got to raise my game here.
The way Blue Peter's going these days, it'll be presented by John Wokes, not John Noakes.
And that, I mean, that's fine for the generation that are going to be tuning into GB.
Who fully assume that John Noakes is still the presenter of yep. Blue Peter.
They say don't poke a sleeping bear, don't woke up a sleeping... I've lost my confidence. So it's gonna have to be autocratic regimes for me.
So I think Mike's leaning on professional wife. You're going autocratic regime. I think that means I'm going to be GB News.
You're going to have to be GB News.
It looks like it, yeah.
If you're not from the UK, GB News is a new news channel.
A new reactionary.
Which is very pro free speech is what they'd say, I think, yes. Is how they'd describe it. But I think sort of certainly as a TV format, Take That could land there. Also, for foreign listeners, Take That were a very popular boy band that I assume didn't travel.
Oh, you're telling me they didn't break through?
I'm pretty sure they didn't break America, did they? They felt very British to me.
Robbie always wanted to break America, didn't he?
I'm sure they all did.
My thing with Take That is basically there's two parts to me. One is I just think they're unforgivably naff.
Yeah.
And I don't like them. And that's one part of my brain. And that's the part of my brain that thinks that I belong in the London Library.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then there's the real me who just
first on the dance floor.
Million loves. That just goes, that is a brilliant song. There's literally two voices in my body. My body is going, that is a brilliant song. My body is, it's moving, it's jiving, I'm feeling emotions, my heart's beating faster. And
Gary
my brain
is playing your body like a lute, isn't
he? He's playing it like a lute. And then there's my brain going, no, no.
My body.
It's Chopin, it's Bach, Henry. That's what you love. You love Bach, Bach, Bach. But I don't. Yeah, so autocratic regimes. Well, the thing is, we're going to be...
By the way, autocratic regimes isn't the topic.
But anyway, let's get back to autocratic regimes.
You just started talking about them. Yeah,
I can't remember how we got onto it.
Well, we're talking about our future careers, and I think we need autocratic regimes as one of our best bets because they're not. It's because they're not elected. It's not because we are in favour of autocracy.
No,
I mean we're broadly in favour of a form of democracy, aren't we? Our that's what our joint position is, isn't it?
Well, it's not something we've talked about, Henry.
No.
Benjamin's benevolent autocracy all the way, aren't you?
Yeah.
Well, if you ask Benjamin.
Benjamin, yeah.
Benjamin, it's not even benevolent autocracy. There's any fucking autocracy. It's fucking fill your boots. But yeah, so what you want is, and then you get given a sort of, well, what is it? You ideally get some sort of palace or...
I don't really mind. As long as we bring back national service, I'm happy.
Yeah. that's your only policy, isn't it? And then, yes, you want to be living in a place that doesn't have any extradition sort of treaties with anywhere. So you just want a very, very isolated regime.
Yeah. Yeah.
I wonder if you get, would you get bored after a while?
I think you, by doing it, you cut down your options to such an extent that bored or not, that's what you're doing. So you can't really be bored because what else could you know, you have to stay in your banana tree lined palace.
Yeah. Yeah. And soon that's why you're getting bowling alleys installed in the basement and you're getting, you know, volleyball stuff on the roof and clay pigeon shooting, but for, you know, drones.
Yeah. And just adding to your menagerie year on year, just adding more and more.
Yeah. And you're bored as you open the parcel and it's another bloody snow leopard puppy.
Yeah. Oh, God.
Completely unmoved.
Not another one.
Join Terence and Cyril. Frolic off. I'm going to go and stare lovelessly at the croc circus.
I assume it's not a puppy either. It's a kitten, isn't it?
No, but at that point, they'll be breeding puppies for you, but you'll still be bored.
Or breeding a snow leopard with a dog.
Just to try and get a reaction out of you. It's a labrapod. We've made you a labrapod. No? Oh, no. Back to the drawing board.
Behead him.
Obviously, you'll have a tap with tiramisu coming out of it, won't you? You'll have hot, cold and tiramisu.
Morning, noon and night.
Even that.
Sounds good, actually.
Does sound pretty good, doesn't it?
Does good, but the shine comes off all of these things eventually, doesn't it?
And obviously, you take a risk going down the autocracy route. There are benefits. You get a crocodile circus. You you get
to hang out with Steven Seagal.
You get to hang out with Steven Seagal. You get to you do get to have a menagerie.
Half snow leopard, half dog, bat.
Yeah, you can meld various species together and experiment with them. For example, can you have a pony but with the big sort of expanding belly of a toad? You know, that does that big huge thing with it.
Yeah. And having made that,
yeah,
can that then operate an F-16 jet?
To defend your compound.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it can't.
No.
But you can try it. You see what happens.
Yes. Yeah. So you can pass the time with you can pass the time with that kind of thing. You know, can a pig have antlers? Again, yes. Can it operate ground to air missiles? Again, no.
Yeah.
But
you will start feeling, I think, after a while, that it's worth getting some human security guards as well.
Yeah. You will eventually.
And the views in the middle distance from your compound are looking increasingly scorched at this point.
Yeah. So there's a couple of things you need to worry about, though, in that situation. One is, occasionally, a fairly elderly Scottish ex-SAS person will be hired in a kind of unofficial capacity to get together a band of ex-military, ex-SAS security types.
All of whom are thoroughly past it and have been for decades.
Past it. These guys
are in dire straits financially.
Because, again, being in the SAS is very similar to being a podcaster, isn't it? With the age of 52 or so, you're basically done. Obviously, they've got the option of advising autocratic regimes in a security capacity. Mm-hmm. So what you might get is a rival autocratic regime, or possibly a CIA person with a grudge, hiring an unofficial squad of ex-military types on a kind of off-grid mission to assassinate you. Yep. So that's something you've got to...
Well, you have to make sure you've got enough pigs with antlers in the way, basically.
Yeah, and you've got to make sure that... and also you've got to make sure those pigs have enough antlers each to really make a difference. Yeah, and
but you don't need to worry too much, because that squad is likely to manage to just get themselves lost to the nearest forest, or just crash their helicopter on route.
Yeah, the good, the exit. So that's in your favour. So again, in the two columns, in the against you column, there will be a squad of ex-Marines, ex-SAS types deployed to kill you. But in the plus column, you've got pigs with antlers.
Yeah.
And also, that squad will be elderly. A lot of them will be hard drinkers. They'll be...
Some of them will have forgotten their diabetes medication. They're going to be feeling rough within a couple of days of the trek.
Yeah.
They've got to go back.
A lot of them also will have got used to the softer high life, having been on SAS Who Dares Wins on Channel 4.
They will. Right.
They'll have got used to having runners around who can bring them a drink.
Yeah.
Kind of thing.
They'll be missing their bungalow in Marbella and Sky Sports. I want to go back to that.
So when they're looking down the barrel of a
fully loaded sow,
fully loaded sow, or a large male Gloucester colour point antlered hog, they might think, with poison tips, they might think
this is a crap idea of Johnny's, wasn't it?
This is a crap idea, and yes, that gribbeting pony is quite mesmerising. I'm feeling drawn to it, but I suspect there might be a trap.
Or is it a gribbeting pony, or is it a maned toad? Hard to tell.
Chalamet. And what's it got in its ankle holster?
It's a wasp with teeth. Run!
Scatter! Split up!
So that's one of those. And the other risk, of course, the other big risk with going down the autocracy route is an uprising of the people. Mm. You'll need that dictator to stay in power, because if the people uprise, believe you me, you're
in for a rough afternoon.
You are in for a rough afternoon, my friend. And
maybe especially when that starts happening, just have a look around the compound. Anything that you could feasibly be hung up from, just take that down, because you want everything to be ground level, really, as much as possible.
Yeah. Well, that's why people will favour living in smooth bungalows. If they've got the long, if you've got the long view, you want a smooth, rounded bungalow, a bit like the thing the Hobbit lives in. Everything's round. No edges, nothing to hang anything off.
Yeah.
And also, what you want is, ironically, quite a modest toilet. Because one of the first things they'll do is, they'll break into your toilet, take photos of it.
Yeah.
And they'll use the fact that you had an...
If there's any gold at all.
The luxuriousness of your toilet will be used to
Well, during the kangaroo court hearing.
Yeah, any gilding. Yeah.
Exactly.
That's going to come up.
So what you want is a surprisingly modest toilet. Yeah.
So they actually break in and they go, oh, he's...
Hang on a minute.
He's like us.
He's all right.
He's just got a hole in the ground.
And his toilet roll isn't even on a special holder. It's just sitting on the edge as if he sort of means to install a toilet roll at some point but hasn't got round to it yet.
And his towel's quite wet. Yeah.
And you need them talking about that for long enough to distract them while you get on your seagull spliced with capybara is your means of escape.
Yep. And you're off.
And hope to God that can actually make flight.
You have to have some sort of hybrid version of a seabird ready to go.
Yeah, your wombat bat.
You want a wombat bat or probably like a narwhal kestrel for an amphibious escape.
Horned giant kestrel.
Horned giant kestrel.
So it can go underwater. Again, the topic is glass. The topic is glass.
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 Glass. Well, look, quick, we'll just nod to glass. Are you a glass half full person or half glass? I can't even.
Glass.
When you send an email, you must give thanks to the postmasters that came before.
Good morning, postmaster. Anything for me?
Just some old shit.
When you send an email, this represents progress. Like a robot shoeing a horse.
Give me your horse.
My beautiful horse.
Thank you for all the emails you've sent to 3beansaladpod@gmail.com.
Thank you.
And this, by the way, is the end of our series. We've got a month off coming up.
So it is.
Ah, yes. Well earned, I think. It's been absolutely bruising, hasn't it, this series? Has been absolutely bruising for us. So I don't think anyone's going to begrudge us.
It's really taken its toll.
I mean, there was all kinds of, wasn't there? Things happened. Can't remember what they were now. But didn't something quite big happen?
Oh, none of them were memorable.
None of them were memorable, but...
I think the main thing that happened was that we ended up engaging some bassoonists to end an argument, which I've...
That's right.
I was pretty pleased about, to be honest.
Oh, that was pretty big.
Our first email's from Howard.
Hello, Howard.
Hi, Howard.
Not from Take That.
Oh, that's my next question.
Dear Beans, after a particularly heavy night of drinking, I decided to wake up early to go swimming at London's Hampstead Ponds to reinvigorate myself for the coming day. And best of all, on the journey there, I could listen to the latest episode of my favourite podcast, Three Bean Salad.
Nice start.
This would prove a catastrophic mistake. Now, this makes reference to, I think, two episodes ago. My stomach first started to turn at the mention of the mint squits and the salmon and gammon sandwiches that Ben would enjoy from Boots. But I made it through that. And then we got to the T-Ratma pube.
No, toss rat.
Hang on.
Okay, sorry.
This was such an unpleasant and visceral mental image that I genuinely started to feel unwell.
Oh, God.
Picturing Henry slurping down that hellish concoction made me feel actively unpleasant.
Yep.
And when Henry finally revealed that it was actually a toss ratma pube, I found myself hurriedly exiting the bus, whereupon I was physically sick onto the pavement.
It's, oh. Oh. Oh dear, sorry about that.
I mean, that's not really what we were going for, was it?
That's not what we're going for.
No. But is that a bollocking or is it just he's just reporting?
He's not used the word bollocking, so, you know, maybe he's maybe he should bollock himself for not having the kind of fortitude to be able to listen to a man talking about.
Well, it might be that his 17 flaming Zambucas here at the night before might have played a part.
Exactly.
Yes,
exactly.
I think that's a big part.
Exactly.
But that plus the toss rat my pube. Yeah.
I think you need to re listen to the episode, Howard. After a deep cleanse.
That's right. And if you're still sick on the pavement, then...
Yeah, Henry will come and clean that piece of pavement for you.
I'll come clean it up.
Judge.
well, he does go on. He writes, this could have been blamed solely on the 6 or so pints of Perry that I'd consumed the night before.
Perry.
Great choice of drink.
A Lambrini man.
What is Perry? I thought he's a short for Peroni.
Perry a sort of sparkling apple-based...
No, it's pear cider, isn't it, Perry?
Oh, is it Perry?
Pear, that's it, not apple. Yeah, that's what I meant.
Oh, yeah.
Pear cider, yeah.
That gets you very drunk, I think, doesn't it? Cider. Yeah, cider in general.
Alcoholic drinks.
Alcoholic, yeah. Especially big pints of it like that.
Mm. I mean, maybe a story for another day, but I went to the launch of Magna's Pear one year. It was a big publicity launch, which I went to. It was at the Edinburgh Festival. Mm. And I only had one, but it made me shit myself.
digestive tract talk. Oh, yeah.
Can magnet? Is there any?
Are you sure that's the only factor?
Was it beta there? Phase stuff then? Because it was early launch. There may have been some little gremlins in the system they had to iron out.
Yeah, were you on some kind of mailing list at the time?
Why were you there?
Was it done in a hospital environment?
Was it because you're going to get a free drink?
I thought that maybe it wasn't the pear cider, Mike, and I thought maybe there were other factors at play. But then the person I went to the event with also revealed to me that they had shat themselves later that day, which feels like too much of a coincidence. And then I told my friend about it, and he said that it's a well-known thing with Perry, and that he used to go out and have a game with his mates where they'd go out drinking Perry, and the first to shit would like lose, and it was like a kind of Russian roulette with drinking Perry.
You need some new friends, Ben.
I had a very similar thing with what was at the time the new Leon. I think it was the Leon chicken nuggets they released a few years ago, which had a Korean dip sauce option, which was a hot Korean sort of chili sauce.
Pear cider based sauce.
Pear cider based sauce. And I had a similar thing, which is it sent me straight to the toilet. Lovely story.
So Howard's going to be really pleased with our response to this.
He's currently puking anew on the pavement's mattress.
Yeah.
it's not very edifying, is it, hearing back the stuff we talk about sometimes on the podcast? Because it's one of those ones where I have to make a mental note to make sure my parents don't ever listen to that episode. Not that they listen to it anyway, to the show, but that's one where I definitely wouldn't want them to listen to the toss wrap my pubes. I wouldn't want that to go into the ears of my parents. Do you know what I mean?
You wouldn't want them to really know you.
No.
Would you?
They nurtured me. They gave me all the chances they could in life. They made sacrifices for me.
Because your brothers don't talk like this,
do they? Talk like that. My brothers have...
I've met your brothers. Delightful, charming, articulate human beings.
They've literally never invented a fecal version of a famous dessert ever, as far as I know. Certainly not talked about it publicly.
They'd know not to.
I think a good Patreon extra would be a video of you playing the audio to your parents.
That would be on a par. For my parents, that'd be on a par with that moment in the film Grizzly Man where Werner Herzog listens to the sound of a man being eaten by bears, by the bears that he thought he loved and he thought loved him. But quite similar.
So you wouldn't let them listen to it, but you'd sit them down in the kitchen and you'd listen to it yourself.
I'd listen to it in front of my parents.
And say, no one must hear this recording. Nobody.
I just give you a clue. It's to do with tiramisu, but it's not as nice as you think. That's all I can tell you. Oh, no. The other option is I do play it to my parents and someone records that, and then we get Werner Herzog to listen to the recording of my parents being played the recording, because that will effectively be the sound of two parents doing to me what those bears did to the grizzly man, which is essentially, I'm listening to a man being torn limb from limb by his own parents. For the shame he has brought on them.
Yes. Anyway, I'll finish reading what he wrote. So he wrote, this could have been blamed solely on the 6 or so pints of Perry I consumed the night before and the poorly driven bus I was sat on. But no, I lay the blame squarely at your disgusting descriptions of the corrupted Italian dessert that you relish describing. Keep up the excellent work, Howard.
Okay. Thank you, Howard. And please drink responsibly.
What's he called again, that guy?
Howard.
Howard.
Howard. Sorry that we made you feel sick. Talking about that.
Yes.
And that's not the kind of podcast we are. It's not the kind of tone we like to set. And for that reason, I will not be talking about the time when I ate a poo barb bum drool. Hello?
Sorry, Henry. The autocratic dictator who was interested in us has just turned off. So that's gone for us now, that option. Mike, tell your wife that her pension's covering all of us now. That's
okay. It's going to be tight. I'm going to have to sell some guitars.
So obviously something happened. Something must have happened with the audio. Obviously, you didn't hear me properly. I said, I won't be talking about the time.
Absolutely perfect. Reading you loud and clear.
About the time there that I ate a poo barb, bum drool.
Poo barb.
Yeah.
Crack crumble. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And for custard, what are you putting in
custard?
For custard?
Pustard.
Okay. Oh, God.
Hot pasta, drizzled all over.
Okay,
my poo.
Howard, I'm so sorry.
Okay. My poo bar.
Howard, turn off.
Oh, turn off. And- And Henry's going to have a month off to think about that.
Okay, and final email is from Kate McCormick.
Hi, Kate.
But this one is a nice short email from Kate, which I think sums up the sentiment that we've been getting from a lot of American listeners of late.
America.
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 America. I'd like two tickets for the Chattanooga Choo Choo.
America. America.
Get me the DA.
A slice of old mama's apple pie down the Alamo in New York City.
Stop talking crazy. No one's ever going to want to drive around in these ridiculous cars you've been designing, Mr. Buick.
Burgers.
We've had a few emails along these lines.
Okay.
She writes, the nerve of you three making so much fun of ranch dressing when you come from the land of salad cream.
Snap.
Yeah.
Although I personally eschew salad cream.
Mm. I don't eat salad cream, but I would die for the right of others to eat it.
To keep it in the fridge.
I would rather live on my feet eschewing salad cream than live on my knees without the option of having salad cream.
Agreed.
In order to eschew it.
But some Americans have stood up for ranch. I don't think we were, maybe we were a bit mean about it. We've never had it though. None of us have ever had it. So
no,
we were pissy. I think
we were a bit pissy about it. Apologies.
Yeah.
And
if you have a home sachet maker, sachet up and post it to us.
Well, they were pointing out. Some people were pointing out that you can buy it in British supermarkets. I've just never seen it. So maybe I'll buy some for next series. We can have a little ranch party.
Have a live taste test.
Live ranch party.
Okay, Kate, thank you. Point taken.
And yes, I think our relationship with the US is, of course, the special relationship. We would hate to see anything jeopardize that. And so we apologize.
Yeah, absolutely right.
Sounds gross, though.
Doesn't it? It sounds really, really rank.
Thanks to everyone who signed up on our Patreon.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Patreon.com/3beansalad. And at one of the tiers that you can sign up at, you get a little shout out in the Sean Bean Lounge where Mike was last night.
Not half.
Big one, was it?
It was a big one. Well, it's the end of the series, isn't it? So there's always a bit of a frisson in the air.
They've got they always get the Perry barrels out, don't they, at the end of the season?
Get the Perry casks are rolling, split them open for the Perry pool.
And of course, last night it was the annual Salads of the World Song Contest, wasn't it?
It was, Ben. Thank you. Yes. And here's my report.
It was very much a case of leave your lasagna charcoal etchings at the door this week at the Sean Bean Lounge for the annual Sean Bean Lounge Salads of the World Song Contest. Ian Boma opened the show, and while his entry form suggested he'd be performing a thrash metal Insalata Caprese, he actually sang Happy Birthday to Vicky Happy Birthday Lee from a mega ramekin full of balsamic vinegar. Ian was immediately disqualified and spiralised, although, owing to an arcane bylaw in the Salads of the World Song Contest rulebook, Vicky Happy Birthday Lee was awarded a lifetime supply of burnt pine kernels. Richard McLaughlin brought the action back to the salad bowl with a reggae fatouche, followed by Van Clef Juncker with a drive-time rock-style Waldorf in F-flat major. In an ill-judged apple for the teacher move, Rob Wagg attempted a one-man close harmony three-bean salad love ballad, forgetting Sean Bean's go-to mantra, there can be only one, open brackets, bean, close brackets. Rob was julienned to contrition. Michael and Bailey Ball sweetened the mood with their country pop Shopska duet, Take Me as the Main Course, Not Just as a Side Dish, but were penalised for overpowering scallions. Tom Jens's synth-pop coleslaw raised more than a few eyebrows, as did Rob Booth's decision to include radishes and swear words in a smooth jazz tabbouleh. But the winner of Sean Bean's homemade carrot batten panpipes was Purple Strawberry, who didn't leave a dry eye in the house with an intentional niçoise performed in the gospel style from a lettuce dryer rotating at 4,738 revolutions per minute. Thanks all.
Okay, and to play us out, a theme tune sent in by you, the listener. Thank you for all the theme tunes you sent in. We've got a few backed up, ready for next season, but they are always gratefully received. This one we're going to play today is from Mark, from not Bremen, but Manchester. He writes, "Hello, Beans, I come bearing a gift, the gift of song." He says, "It's not exactly an outro song, but instead a dizzying 5-minute crab-centric prog opera."
Oh, man, is this the one you were talking about the other day?
Yeah, so I lost it and then appealed for its return and he sent it in again.
Oh, brilliant.
He says, "I've spent far too long creating this and now sick of the fucking sound of it. The thought of crabs pervading my every waking and sleeping moment. Anyway, it's your problem now. I hope you enjoy it. Lots of love, Mark, not from Bremen, but Manchester."
Thank you very much.
Very good. Thank you, Mark.
P.S. I should credit the contributions of my reluctant wife and daughters. Plus my friend and fellow listener, Oliver, who all recorded glorious crab nonsense to add to this hot mess. I can't wait to hear this.
Sounds amazing. It's ticking all my boxes.
We will see you in the month of December. Mm. But until then, goodbye.
Bye.
Goodbye and thank you.
Good night, love.
Good night, love. Sleep well.
This is the 3-Bean Evolution Service to Crab. Stopping at Rockpool, Bacon on String, Castellization, and Crab.
There's a phenomenon in evolutionary science where over the millennia and whatever, various animals, different animals, have evolved into a crab.
Hurry up, slow coach. You're going to miss the great crab evolution.
Eventually turn into a crab.
Here long before we arrived, no doubt. Here long after we go.
Because the crab is like the ultimate, it's purely evolved in the correct way. They're the optimum thing.
This mankind thing is just a passing phase.
So do you think we're on our way to being crabs?
We're just taking the long scenic route to the final crab.
Yeah.
fast cars in your fancy clothes. Although the whole thing you need for that life. Air to breathe, water to drink, shelter to live in, the love of the crab.
Are you awake? Janine? Are you alright? What? Oh, jeez! Fucking hell! What's happened? Wait. I recognise you. You're...
Shh!